Welcome to Transforming Growth, presented by STEG, a CEPR consortium initiative. My name is Tim Phillips, and in this series, I'm investigating some of the most important new research in economic development. Now this week, it's the turn of Catherine Stapleton from the World Bank, and she's going to be talking about automation in advanced economies and what this means for trade and globalization. First of all, I'm joined again by Joe Kobosky from STEG. Joe, welcome back.
Hi, Tim.
Joe, why did you choose this paper for your conference?
Manufacturing has traditionally been an entryway for low-income countries into industrialization and growth, but an alternative these days for rich economies, rather than doing offshoring or importing their manufactured goods from low-income countries, is to automate. And so understanding what the impact of automation is on low-income countries and how that affects their growth process is really quite important.
I guess that has been a very important driver of structural transformation over the last couple of decades.
Certainly.
Okay, well, let's find out how automation is affecting globalization. You're listening to Transforming Growth. Catherine, welcome.
Hi, Tim.
You examined automation in manufacturing. Automation is a big term, isn't it? What sort of activities are we thinking of that are being automated?
Yeah, great question. So in our research, we're studying three specific types of automation. The first is the use of CNC machines, where that stands for computer numerically controlled machines.
Okay.
And these conduct tasks like cutting, welding, or metal stamping.
Okay.
So if you picked up your iPhone, the back of your phone was probably produced using a CNC machine, and so are probably lots of the small metal parts inside.
As you said that, I actually did pick up my iPhone and looked at it.
Okay, I also did. It helps me to understand. Then the next is industrial robots, and this is the main focus of the paper. And these are conducting activities like welding, painting, assembly, grinding. So your car was probably largely produced using a robot. The paint was probably sprayed on using a spray painting robot.
Right.
Finally, we also look at the use of flexible manufacturing systems. So this is a fully automated production line. So if you picture a line of machines and robots jointly working together to weld and join and assemble parts in a flexible way where the robot does one thing and then the next machine can adjust, that's kind of the creme de la creme of the automation we're studying.
And why is looking into this relevant for what's happening in low-income countries?
I suppose to start with, in recent history, a lot of the development gains we've seen have been from countries that followed this path of manufacturing-led development. Offshoring and the rise of what's been called global value chains played a big part in this, particularly in East Asia. Many countries there were recipients of FDI or became offshoring destinations from advanced economies. This is something that has been called the flying geese paradigm. If you think of geese flying, say, from higher income countries like Hong Kong and Japan, moving certain stages of production to mainland China, and then mainland China later moving these on to another wave of countries, say Vietnam or Bangladesh. And this was an important source of jobs, particularly lower skilled jobs, and also jobs that facilitate productivity spillovers to other areas of the economy. With automation, big question being asked is then, well, if a lot of these jobs or these tasks are being automated, are we going to see that this movement of manufacturing production stops happening and then countries have yet to industrialize? Well, is it that they can now no longer follow this path of manufacturing led development? So that's the big question and concern, that then if they can't follow manufacturing led development, then how are they going to grow? How are they going to find this source of job creation?
So the worst case scenario here is that this process of globalization creating structural transformation, that process just slows down or stops.
Yeah, exactly. And then further developing countries that are currently, for example, trying quite hard to have structural transformation or to attract manufacturing are then unable to do so and struggle to be involved in global value chains and then maybe perhaps struggle to grow in other ways. That's the fear or worst case scenario, as you say.
But, Catherine, but, for many years, centuries, policymakers and workers, they worried about the rise of the robots. We've learned over that time that the impact of automation isn't always straightforwardly that it replaces labour that would be done by human beings.
Exactly. It's this worry about the displacement of automation. Mm. But in our research, we actually find this positive impact of automation. And I suppose part of that is this fact that we're very good at focusing on this displacement effect. So I think we find it very easy to picture when a robot replaces a human in one specific task. Mm. But what we're less good at thinking about is all these countervailing forces of automation. So all these other impacts that are more subtle behind the scenes. So for example, the fact that automation might make certain tasks cheaper, and so that makes a firm more productive, could lead to lower prices or higher quality, which could then raise demand and actually increase production overall. Or this quality aspect, the fact that automation might raise quality and so allow us to produce products we simply never had before or at a higher quality than we could ever imagine. Or this new task aspect, the fact that automation actually can generate new tasks either within the same firm. So if you think when a firm purchases or starts using a robot, there's all of these other tasks that then it needs to perform, like robotics integration, hiring people to set up this new supply chain on its floor, or robotics programmers, robotics manufacturers. Then kind of outside of the firm, if you think of, yeah, where we have entire clusters of robotics firms, say in parts of China,
yeah,
those are all new jobs and new tasks generated. So I think there are all of these other impacts that are more dynamic around the economy that I think we're only just grasping and only just starting to actually measure and understand in more detail.
So let's have a look at what you found out in this piece of research. You used firm-level data from Spanish firms. Two questions: why Spain, and why was it important to go down to that firm level?
Great question. The reason we use Spanish data is mainly because we wanted to understand both on the automation side, the specifics of which firms were using specific forms of automation. And that's actually remarkably hard to come by. So I think Rob Siemens has written this funny piece where it's something like, if a robot takes our job, we won't even know because currently we're looking at data on sales of robots. So we know the automotive industry purchased X million robots, but we have no idea which firms are actually purchasing them. Was that one firm used them all, or was that all firms using them in an even way? Spain is one of the rare countries which actually comes up with this data and conducts a survey asking firms very specifically, do you use a robot? Do you use CNC machines? Do you have a flexible manufacturing system? And then in combination with that, automation is hard to measure. And then global value chains are also notoriously hard to measure. So understanding in depth what's going on with a firm's supply chain, sometimes the firm doesn't even know. And so getting data on these things is also hard. And this Spanish data set is unique in asking firms a lot of specific details about its supply chain, allowing us to bring together these two pieces of the puzzle to then gain a more detailed understanding.
So, in Spain, how much automation is happening?
I think Spain is the 10th most automated country in the world, and that's in terms of industrial robots. Our sample ranges from 1990 to 2016. Mm-hmm. In 1990, it was about 15%, and this is basically all large Spanish manufacturing firms.
Yeah.
So around 15% of firms were using robots at this point, and this rose to about 30% of firms by 2016. It's far higher for CNC machines. It's about double that. CNC machines are far more prevalent, while flexible manufacturing systems are lower in prevalence.
After these firms have invested in automation, is it working for them? Are they becoming more productive?
Exactly. So this is exactly what we find. When firms start using robots, this has this positive impact on both labor productivity and TFP, which is total factor productivity. Mm-hmm. And the impact on total factor productivity is actually even greater than the impact on labor productivity.
So I'll link back to where we started here. Do these firms who have supply chains trade less with firms in low-income countries as a result of this increase in productivity in their factories?
A headline finding is that when farms start using robots, it actually has this positive impact on both their imports from developing countries and their number of affiliates there. And so when we drill down into this result to look at what's this coming from, there seem to be two kind of effects under the surface. So one is for this group of firms, and this is actually the majority of firms that we study in the Spanish data. They actually started to automate before they started expanding their supply chains into developing countries. For these firms, it looks like automation has this positive impact on productivity, on firm expansion, and these firms actually are more likely to newly start engaging with lower-income countries, either from importing from them or starting to open affiliates there. Then there's this other group of firms, which is maybe more the reshoring story firms. So when we talk about this reshoring idea, typically the assumption is firms first offshored production, they've now realized robots exist and they're going to reshore production. But for these firms, when we look at only the firms that have already offshored production from Spain to lower income countries, when they start to adopt robots in Spain, it doesn't seem to have any impact on reshoring or decrease their offshoring. But what it does do is starts increasing their offshoring to higher income countries more than to lower income countries, meaning that their production shifts in composition away from lower income countries to some degree.
Put this all together, is this bad news for the structural transformation story as a whole?
No, so I think it's actually surprisingly good news. We actually are finding this strong positive effect that firms are starting to use robots. It's making them start newly offshoring, newly moving parts of production to low-income countries or doing business with them. That could be for various reasons. It could be that engaging with countries far away is quite a costly activity. You have to set up your supply network. You have to perhaps build an affiliate or create these relationships. And maybe through automating, you become more productive, you expand, and that enables you to go and move other parts of your production process, perhaps those parts which you can't yet automate. That's what we are finding for Spain. Particularly, this period is 1990 to 2016. So it could be that this is the older effect of what was happening in the 1990s and 2000s, which may not necessarily represent what's happening now. But at that point, it generally seems to be pretty good news for lower income countries and structural transformation.
Yes, I'm going to ask you about what might have changed in a minute. But the first thing that I really do want to ask about this is, through the 1990s and up to 2016, well, quite a lot happened in the global economy. Are you sure that you are capturing the impact of automation here?
Another great question, and a really, really important one.
And a really difficult one, isn't it?
And a difficult one, yes, exactly. We've done a lot of things to try and ensure that this is automation and not other things going on at the same time. The main thing we do is we're using patents. So we've got this data on globally filed patents related to robotics. And we're taking advantage of the fact that what you can do from these patents is you can understand exactly which tasks different robot inventions are performing and the timing of when they're invented. So we use this to try and isolate essentially when new inventions happened, which tasks suddenly became feasible to automate. For example, it became feasible to automate processes such as welding using an arc welding robot quite early on, while things like assembly robots or robots involving sensors happened a lot later. We use this timing to try and isolate solely this path of new inventions led some firms to automate some things at some times, which other firms couldn't do because they were not conducting those similar tasks. And that's our core identification strategy in economics lingo. And that's the instrumental variable we use. We also do a lot of other things, like trying to control for tariffs or other supply shocks, which have changed global trade over this period and made offshoring a lot easier. We also try an alternative instrumental variable where we use the categories of robots that became commercially available over time. We also try excluding the financial crisis, excluding the automotive industry. All of these things still lead to this similar story, which is making us believe this does seem to be suggestive that this is the causal impact of automation.
But this takes us up to 2016. There's also been something happening in the global economy since 2016. It has led to a lot of discussion about reshoring, what's happening to these global value chains. Might COVID have changed this dynamic, what's going on in firms and the link between automation and structural transformation?
I think that's also a fascinating question and one I've been thinking about a lot. So I think in terms of COVID, there are three potential impacts. Well, main ones, probably a lot others, which might have affected this relationship. So the first is the obvious one that, of course, COVID has meant that hiring humans is now relatively more costly because we're dangerous, we can get sick, we need to be protected, whereas robots aren't going to catch COVID anytime soon.
Yeah.
Then there's also been this big change in global supply chains. Obviously, previously, it was really easy to just hop on a plane, have business travel. Supply chains worked seamlessly. Now, with border closures, business travel is expensive. It's difficult to coordinate across borders. And perhaps having supply chains in other parts of the world is now less convenient than it was before. But then on the same time as the other obvious impact, that COVID has meant that working remotely has become culturally more acceptable and has probably advanced our technological abilities to have someone sitting on the other side of the world working for a firm somewhere else, which itself could actually enable cross-border trade and might make it easier to coordinate these complex supply chains. So I think a key question is where these impacts net off in terms of what firm decisions about whether to be adopting robots or whether to be changing their supply chains. In terms of what we know so far, there's plenty of early evidence building that COVID does seem to be accelerating the adoption of digital technologies and management practices and definitely things like remote working. Whether it's actually increasing the adoption of robots seems to be more inconclusive. So I think there's been some research coming out of the Center for Human-Centered AI at Stanford suggesting that there actually hasn't been a big rush towards automation with robots, but instead there's been this demand for flexible plug-and-play robots. Because actually, to automate a full production process involves a robotics integrator. It's extremely costly. Firms typically, I think it's estimated, it costs about 10 times the cost of the actual robots to integrate a robot system.
Right.
So to fully automate your supply chain in one factory. And firms often build a whole new factory in order to have their new automated system. So COVID's also made it very difficult to do these big changes, both in terms of feasibility and in terms of costs. So I think on the automation side, it's not actually that clear yet how COVID has affected robot adoption. On the trade side, I think there was a lot of discussion about how COVID will affect the geography of global supply chains, with initially this discussion of, oh, well, firms will reshore because their production's far, far away and it's now very inconvenient, to then a next wave of, oh, actually, if you've got a factory in China or Vietnam, it's actually great because they've had very little impacts of COVID since April or May. And actually, their production is continuing while it's not in places like the US or Europe. I think one recent piece of research, which I have seen, which is a survey of Swedish firms, showed that I think about a third of the firms surveyed were saying they were making adjustments to their supply chain. But the most common adjustment was to be diversifying their supply chains. And only 2% of firms were actually saying they were looking to relocate production back home to Sweden, while most firms were looking to simply newly offshore or create new locations and make sure they're reducing the risk in their supply chains. So I think there's a lot going on at once. I wouldn't jump to the conclusion that the automation will lead to a whole new wave of reshoring, but I think the effects we'll see probably will change the game quite a lot in the next few years.
As you say, Catherine, quite a lot going on all at once, and probably quite a lot more research for you to do on this one as well. But not the disaster for development and structural transformation that many people might think that the impact of automation has been.
No, I think the impacts are far more complex, and I think we're only just starting to scratch the surface of what they are. And this is only in automation in manufacturing. Then there's the whole question of automation in services, because I suppose another big trend we've seen with COVID is while services trade has generally been very negatively affected, certain areas of services trade, like ICT, professional services, trade has actually increased quite substantially because of this ease of remote working and the realization that you can offshore tasks anywhere in the world and it makes no difference because your employees are sitting at home away from the office anyway. So there's a whole new question about further different models of services-led development as well. So lots of food for thought, and it will be fascinating when more research comes out on these topics.
Good luck scratching the surface on that one, Catherine. For now, thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Tim.
You're listening to Transforming Growth. The paper we've been talking about is called Automation, Trade and Multinational Activity, Micro Evidence from Spain. The authors are Catherine Stapleton and Michael Webb. Now, we're nearly at the end of our journey, and in the last part, we will be talking to Nicola Limodio of Bocconi University on China's foreign direct investment. But first of all, Joe, thank you very much for all your contributions.
Thanks, Tim. You too.
And thank you to all of you for listening to Transforming Growth. You won't want to miss any of our episodes, so subscribe to make sure you hear the whole series. And you can find out more about STEG by visiting steg.ceper.org.